Okay, good morning, everybody. Please be seated. Our first case is case number 60846, Desert Valley Associates versus HSBC Bank USA et al. And we have Mr. Ackerman representing the appellant. If you wish to proceed, Mr. Ackerman, I'll give you 15 minutes. You will reserve any time for rebuttal.
I would like to reserve time for questions and rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay, how much time do you want to reserve for rebuttal?
I'm assuming we're going to need about 5 minutes for my argument, so...
Well, you have a lot then. Okay, come on up. We'll see how it goes. I'd like that. Come on, why don't you come on up to the podium here, and then they'll put the timer on, and we can kind of keep track of what's going on then, like that. So you can go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. Now, I remember first day of civil procedure in law school, and we're talking about drafting complaints, and the professor explains the shotgun approach. You assert all viable causes of action, even though some may not go forward, even though some may be contradictory to each other. We see this all the time in the practice of law. You have breach of contract and unjust enrichment arguments presented in the same complaint, even though by definition these claims are mutually exclusive. You have breach of contract and tort claims asserted in the same complaint arising out of the same circumstances. In my first case study argument here in Nevada, I alleged a breach of contract and a tortious interference claim on rising out of the same circumstances, and I was struck by the fact that I prevailed on both claims. However, the damages were duplicative, so I can only recover under one. This case is very similar, except that it involves a mechanics lien, and that's the only difference, really, between these other causes of action that you'll see every day in court. Now, in the lower court, HSBC applied to set aside the default judgment on the basis of excusable neglect. The district court found that they were served the summons and complaint. In fact, HSBC admitted that they were served the summons and complaint. The district court found they were served the notice of entry of order from the judgment that resulted from the default. And the district court found that there was no excusable neglect to set aside. In addition to that, we were well beyond the six-month limitation period for them to apply to set aside. That meant they were required to move forward on the claim that the underlying judgment was void. That was their only avenue. Now, the district court found the judgment was void on the grounds that Desert Valley should have foreclosed the mechanics lien. There is no legal justification that I found for this ruling.
So you're saying that like the one action rule, which is on deeds of trust, doesn't apply in mechanics liens, that the holder of the lien has the option of either foreclosing on the mechanics lien or alternatively just filing a civil suit for a breach of contract?
In fact, that's codified. NRS 108-238 specifically sets forth that nothing in the chapter regarding mechanics liens precludes a party from proceeding on a breach of contract action.
Counsel, if I can kind of skip to the chase, because I guess the preliminary thing for me, even before we get to that argument, is whether or not we are clear whether this is in personam or in rem, if that's even a real issue. Was service or lack of service contested down below? So we even get into the next argument.
No, it was not. The argument about that this was purely an in rem action appears first time on this appeal. I would also point out that the complaint didn't just allege breach of contract and mechanics lien, it also alleged tortious conduct.
How did you serve HSBC with the lawsuit?
The prior attorney, they were personally served at their headquarters location, which I believe was in New York. And they admitted they received service, then they phoned that on to Wells Fargo to tender defense.
So Wells Fargo is like a servicer for them, or what?
Yeah.
So they're competing banks, so I was a little concerned that, how Wells Fargo works for HSBC,
As this court has seen numerous cases, I've been involved in well over 300 of these foreclosure and property cases. Yeah, it's pretty typical that HSBC may hold the note in the deed of trust, but another bank is actually servicing the mortgage.
Okay.
And part of those contracts, I don't know if all of them, but frequently they require the tender of defense.
Okay, so let me get back to what Justice Douglas was saying, and maybe help you along here to try and, because I think we understand the legal issues and we'll hear from opposing counsel, but HSBC, you say, was served in New York through their proper resident agent, whoever their agent for service was.
I believe it was at their headquarters, Your Honor.
Okay. Their headquarters, and yeah. So, you know, how was, so was it the secretary or who was served in the headquarters, do you know?
I would have to pull out the certificate of service.
I don't know if that, I'm sorry, I may be throwing out red, I don't know if that's even an issue, if the service was proper, but then we get to the issue on jurisdiction. HSBC was a beneficiary of the deed of trust in Nevada, so it foreclosed, and it owns real estate after the foreclosure trustee's sale in Nevada. Is that correct?
A little more convoluted. Silver State Bank was the beneficiary under the deed of trust. At some point, it appears they foreclosed, but as we know, they went into bankruptcy, and it appears that HSBC acquired this note.
Okay, I don't think banks went into bankruptcy. They go into their...
The FDIC
takes them over, and then the FDIC sold... The Silver State Bank's assets to HSBC, is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
Okay. When counsel can tell us if we're incorrect, but go ahead from there.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll jump to the chase. I mean, what they're asking here for is a ruling from this court that the existence of a mechanics lien forestalls the ability to proceed on a tort claim. And I would contend to this court that leads to absurd results. If I suppose that I hire a contractor and I kick him off my job and have him pay them, simultaneously I withhold his equipment, are we going to say he has to foreclose his mechanics lien before he can seek to recover his
well,
property?
Well, under NRS 40.430, if you have a deed of trust, that you have to foreclose on a deed of trust first or else you waive your security. So the question is, I assume the argument is the same procedure applied for mechanics liens as it does for deeds of trust. So I think I understand your position. Anything else you want to tell us right now?
Well, I guess the only thing is they are outside the statute for moving to set aside under 60B 1, 2, or 3. Their only option is to allege that the underlying claim is void. Even if this court were to somehow find that that was true, and I found no law to support the ruling that a mechanics lien would forestall the tort claim, their delay is not reasonable. So even if there was a reason to find the claim void, it should not be overturned. The default should not be overturned because of their unreasonable delay.
Okay, thank you. And you have about 8 minutes for rebuttal, if you'd like to reserve that.
Thank you.
Okay, and then we have Mr. Stern on behalf of the respondents. So you may proceed.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. Even this shotgun approach to the complaint did not leave any basis for the district court to determine or to judge that HSBC was personally liable for anything in this case. And so when Judge Stand had determined that the judgment was void against HSBC because it was an in-rem defendant against whom the personal judgment had entered, she got that right. And
what was her basis for deciding they were an in-rem defendant?
The basis, Justice Douglas, is that HSBC had only one allegation in the complaint made against it, and that is that it was the owner of the property. And just Judge Skin performed very careful review of the complaint and of the underlying judgment. And she found in the, and this is in the hearing transcript, and it's in her order, that the only claim against HSBC, the only allegation, I should say, is that HSBC misrepresented the status of the property. Now, the reason that was alleged is because HSBC purchased the property at foreclosure despite the mechanics lien, and that's essentially the core of the fraud claim, and that's it. That's the only allegation. If we look at the complaint carefully, and I think Judge Skane did this, all of the factual allegations relating to whether a debt is owed are made against ASC, and that is the doing business name of Wells Fargo. So the actual claims for relief as well are made against, relating to breach of contract, are made against Wells Fargo. There's really nothing in the complaint that suggests that HSBC had a contractual relationship with the plaintiff. Even the breach of fiduciary claim, which is a little bit out there.
Mr. Stern, I understand your argument. You know, we'll get into the merits of the case, but under 60B, you have to show one of the grounds to set aside the default judgment. And meritorious defense is one of the components, so we understand that, which I think you're setting forth here. But where's the other grounds under 60B, especially since the 66 months expired, that would allow you to set aside the default judgment?
2 points on that, Justice Gibbons. First of all, the six-month limit does not apply when the judgment is void, and the appellants are not correct in saying that we're making this argument for the first time on appeal. We did make it in to the district court that the judgment was void. Otherwise, Judge Stein would
not. How is the judgment void? Tell me, what's your argument on that?
And the judgment is void because HSBC had no relationship, no contractual relationship. They weren't even alleged to have a contractual relationship with the plaintiff. They were purely an in-rem defendant. That's why they were there, because they were the owner of the property. So when the judgment was entered, it was entered with joint and several liability without a sufficient evidentiary basis for any claim against HSBC for personal liability.
But generally, on a void judgment on 60B is if they weren't, you weren't served, for example, that would make it void the judgment because you didn't have proper notice of it. But you're talking about the merits of the case and how the complaint was alleged and so on and so forth. My understanding, wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, that doesn't void the judgment. You know, you have to have some sort of defect in the service or something like that. Otherwise, you know, it's an issue of a meritorious defense, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Your Honor, we do not contest service that was not contested below, and we can get into why the ball was dropped between Wells Fargo and HSBC, but that's not really the issue. The issue I think that Judge Skane confronted is when you have a defendant, and it does bleed over into the meritorious defense, but as this court has said many times, both in the context of the Rule 55B and in the context of even a discovery sanction where a default is entered, the judgment has to have an evidentiary basis for it. It has to have more than...
Counsel, in this case, if we have valid service, because the ball was dropped, no one has contested that to push it in as you're assuming this interim classification. The court's pursuing that it's an impersonal action when valid service has been made and they're rendering the judgment. They rendered that, as you said, the ball was dropped. I gather nothing was asserted as to why there was no follow-up or follow-through on behalf of HSBC to see what was going on until this outer limit period came in, and now you're moving to set aside and assert their, in essence, affirmative defenses.
Yeah, so there's two strands. I'd like to address both, because we still have, you know, why is the judgment void, and the other service issues that we did discuss is because...
But even asserting void, getting over this basic compass, just as Gibbons was getting into, how do you get around this basic, the construct of the statute that you're coming in and you're asking to have it set aside?
Maybe I'll start with that, Justice Douglas. The service was made on HSBC and its Buffalo headquarters. They tendered to Wells Fargo. Because as was said, that's the relationship. The servicer is Wells Fargo. HSBC owns the economic interest in the note, but that's basically it. It's really Wells Fargo that's dealing with it. So, and Wells Fargo is the same company as ASC. It's just a DBA. So Wells Fargo gets it. Of course, ASC does not get served in the lawsuit. And so that was one part, and this was the plaintiff thought it was the same company as Silver State, which it wasn't. So Wells Fargo doesn't get personal service. They do get a tender from HSBC. HSBC at that point kind of assumes that Wells Fargo is handling the complaint and defending it. For reasons that we don't fully understand, Wells Fargo did not carry the ball into the end zone in terms of the defense. But from HSBC's perspective, what we argued down below to Judge Scan is because it had an equitable, because it had an indemnity right and tendered the defense, that HSBC thought that it was, and we have an affidavit supporting this, that HSBC thought that the lawsuit was being defended. What happened then was that the plaintiffs got their judgment.
But then we get into timeliness of their action.
And that's where I'm going, Justice Douglas. Then HSBC moves when it does, 2 years after the judgment is entered, because The plaintiffs themselves sit on the judgment for 2 years. They say that they were unable to enforce it in Nevada, which, you know, taking that at face value, it still does not explain why it took them 2 years. What happened is they domesticated the judgment in California. They domesticated the judgment in California, and then they attempt to serve to enforce the judgment. And so there's been no explanation for why the plaintiffs themselves, why Desert Valley delayed for 2 years. But when they did domesticate the judgment in California and served notice of that judgment, that's when Wells Fargo and HSBC both learned what was happening. They retained my office, and within a month, we filed a motion with the district court to vacate the judgments. So the timing here is explained by the plaintiff's own inaction in terms of enforcing the judgment. Now, we're not, they get 6 years, and they can renew the judgments, Justice Douglas. We understand
that, but you're pushing the burden back on the plaintiff for delaying. The burden is really on the defendant for delaying coming forth to the court. I appreciate the time that your office took in coming to the court.
And Justice Douglas, I think Judge King considered that. And it goes, again, coming back to the question of whether the judgment is either, whether we're moving under Rule 60B, 133, or whether we can move it as, whether the judgment is void. The relationship here is that the judge, we asked the Judge King to set aside, to vacate the judgment based on excusable neglect. And we believe she should have granted that based on HSBC's position that it had tendered a defense to Wells Fargo. We believe that satisfies excusable neglect.
Well, I think that's, Mr. Stern, you've got some great arguments. The problem is the 6 months, like Justice Douglas said, you know, is if the service is good, and I don't know about this judgment being void. We're certainly going to look at it. That's one of the reasons we're arguing. It's kind of a novel argument here. If the service isn't contested as being invalid, usually that's almost always the void argument. They say, I never got served. So that,
I wish I had that argument, Justice Douglas.
Well, you do the best you can, I understand. Now, let me ask you this. If we disagreed with your position here, and we haven't even talked about it, but if we did, wouldn't you have a remedy? Isn't there, you can file an independent action? Is that a possibility under Rule 60B to try and set it aside if grounds exist there?
I think we do have that avenue, Justice Stevens. We haven't pursued it because we won down below.
Right.
I understand. And I think as you look at this, there is some novelty here in terms of the whether the judgment is void. There are grounds, and I would argue that, and ask that you consider this, there are grounds to deem a judgment void outside of imperfect service. There is some crossover with...
And what are those grounds?
For example, as happened in this case, this is a case where HSBC, under the complaint itself, was not alleged to have done anything other than own the property, and yet it was hit with a personal judgment for a tort.
The way I understand the facts, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that Desert Valley did some work on the property. The work pre-existed HSBC's acquisition of the property, and it may have done it then afterwards, so I'm not sure when it started and stopped. So potentially, Desert Valley would have a claim there, whether it's mechanics lien or perhaps some sort of contract under agency argument or whatever. I'm not sure what their theory is, but against the owner of the property, which is HSBC, eventually became the owner. So it seems to me there's a colorable claim here that may be subject to complete defenses, it might be subject to summary judgment, but it's still a claim. I mean, it's something they have at least have a right to assert based on HSBC's ownership.
Well, they have every right to assert the argument, but in order to get the judgment, Justice Gibbons, they have to present the evidence to show that the claim is good. Even if you admit the facts of the complaint, that happens after a fall, that doesn't entitle them to a judgment. They still have to show that the judgment, and I believe the standard is substantial evidence because, you know, this is Rule 55B, that the actions alleged against the defendant led to the damage, not only in terms of the amount, but actually the damage itself. And there's a lot of precedent from this court on that point.
Now, how is the judgment? Was it done on a prelip or done by affidavit?
There was both. There was an affidavit and a prelip, but if you look at the judgment itself, it doesn't have any factual findings. It doesn't apportion liability at all. It makes a finding of joint and several liability, even though the claims for breach of contract and fiduciary duty and breach of the implied covenant were made only against ASC and not against HSBC. The only claim that was made against HSBC is the unjust enrichment, and this is important because it gets us back to the statute, 238. This is on Chapter 108, 238 and 239. The plaintiffs say that that statute entitles them to pursue simultaneously the tort claim and the mechanics lien claim, but it actually doesn't. The statute is very clear, and I'll read it. Sorry, John, for the time here. I'll read it for the panel's benefit. It says that the provisions of Chapter 108 must not be construed to impair or affect the right of a lien claimant to whom any debt may be due for work or materials. And there's never been any claim that HSBC owed a debt for work or materials. The theory against HSBC was unjust enrichment, which is a contract alternative. It was a fraud claim. In addition, it was a fraud claim that the only fact to support it was that HSBC bought the property even though there was a mechanics lien. And so again,
but that seems to me that would be possible under unjust enrichment, because the elements are, you know, we can't have a written contract with somebody to claim unjust enrichment. It has to be implied in fact. In this case, it would be more done on the property. I don't say there's any merit to it, but I could see the theory on this. Yeah, I mean, is it your position that there's a one action rule that you have to file a complaint to foreclose a mechanics lien before you can sue independently for unjust enrichment or breach of contract?
And I'm glad you asked that question, Justice Ginsburg, because I was hoping to get there before my remaining.
We want
to
hear about that.
If we look at the next statute, this is discussed at length in my reply brief below, which didn't make it into the record. We filed a supplement yesterday, so it can be part of the record, but we did bring it up below. Statute 108.239, subparagraph 5, we believe, requires foreclosure and distribution of the funds, certainly against a defendant against whom no personal liability can be alleged, because there's no contract alleged.
So you think there's the equivalent of a one-action rule, and I use 40.430 for deeds of trust, which I'm sure you're both real familiar with, that there's similar analogous statute for mechanics liens.
Yes, Justice Gibbons. You go against the property first, particularly if in a situation like here, all we really have is a contract for work, and the statutory remedy for that is the mechanics lien. They had a mechanics lien. They chose not to foreclose. Who knows why? But they, instead of foreclosing, which is what they should have done, they went against HSBC, a defendant that was never a party to the contract and it was not alleged. And in my 12 seconds remaining, I will remind the court that because we're here at a vacature of a default judgment, Judge Scan is entitled to considerable discretion. And there's been no basis to show that she abused that discretion, so on that basis, she should be affirmed.
Right. But on the other hand, it might be a legal issue, which we review de novo. So yeah, if it's factually, I agree with you, but if it's legal, it's a de novo review, so I could make the argument on issues of law as well. So, okay. Thank you, Mr. Stern, very much. Mr. Ackerman.
Thank you. Addressing some of the claims made by the respondent here, HSBC did engage in tortious conduct.
Now, what did you allege against them in the complaint against HSBC? What exactly did they do to damage your client then?
They acquired the property June 8th of 2008. Desert Valley was working on the property at the time. ASC, who they've alleged is their agent, had absolute notice that Desert Valley was working. HSBC also hired real estate agents to come out, take pictures of the property, prepare it for sale.
So this work was done after they acquired the property?
Before and after. Okay. It was ongoing as of June 8th. I believe it was completed in the first week, maybe a week and a half of August.
Okay.
And during this time, there was at least three visits by real estate agents working for HSBC. HSBC did indeed encounter, first off, to say that HSBC isn't subject to personal jurisdiction in Nevada, I don't even know how to address that. They have business here. They don't have branches, but they do have business here. They buy and sell property here. They are engaged in business, and the conduct complained of here was directed at Nevada. specifically because of the property.
I think the counsel's primary point was, and you know, we didn't get to these, is under 108.239 subsection 12, it's somewhat like a one-action rule for mechanics liens like it is for deeds of trust. And I'd hear your position on that, and also, well, why don't you talk about that first?
That interpretation of 239, in my opinion, violates the express provisions of 238, which specifically allow other causes of action than foreclosure of the mechanics lien. In this case, I would also say that at least 238 is addressing what would obviously be a related cause of action. I have a breach of contract. Well, obviously, my mechanics lien is because I was hired to do work on the property. We're now saying that this would forestall a tort. I'm trying to figure out how would that work in practice. If I go forward with my mechanics lien and it takes more than 2 years for me to foreclose on behalf of my client, are they forestalled by the statute of limitations now from asserting a subsequent tort arising out of the same facts? Is there a res judicata? Instead, it seems perfectly reasonable that you can go forward, if there is tortious action, in the same set of circumstances that give rise to a mechanics lien claim, you go forward with both causes of action, and the trial court gets to decide, did you prove a tort? Are you limited to your mechanics lien? In some cases, maybe they can even find both, and there would be damages both ways. But I want to answer a question for this court about why Desert Valley did not foreclose. Desert Valley asserted the mechanics lien. Subsequently, HSBC put the subject property for sale. Desert Valley then submitted a copy of the mechanics lien and the Liz pendants to the title company. That sale fell through, and a few weeks later, HSBC sold the property out from under the mechanics lien on a special warranty deed that disclaimed liens asserted against parties other than HSBC. And at that time,
was there still Liz pendants on the property?
Yes, there was.
And there was no proof of nothing filed in court to discharge the pendants or bond it off or anything?
No, in fact, I have the dates. The sale, the special warranty deed was recorded on March 10th of 2009. The complaint was filed on January 30th of 2009. Service was not effective until May. So it's right in the middle of this filing and the service of process. But Desert Valley now been facing a default and having what they considered a valid tort claim, not just based on the conduct prior to the complaint, but also including HSBC's conduct after the complaint was filed, which formed a substantial portion of the prove-up hearing. They moved forward rather than deprive what they considered to be an innocent third-party homeowner of the deal they got in buying this property. Their attitude was, wait a minute, HSBC got the excess insurance proceeds, they got the benefit of the work, they got $35,000 from some homeowner who maybe didn't understand the implications of the special warranty deed, and now we're supposed to go deprive that homeowner.
Well, one answer is, since you did record a mechanics lien, that's only good for 6 months unless you sort of foreclose it, then it's barred by the statute of limitations. So I don't know what the timetable is of the date of your recording the mechanics lien versus the sale.
August 13th was the date of the recording. Complaint was filed January 30th. So it was within the 6 months.
Well, but you didn't sue to foreclose the lien, so if you didn't sue to foreclose the lien, then the 6 months would expire and the lien would be invalid. Mechanics lien after that, correct?
It would, but the complaint did assert foreclosure of the mechanics lien.
Okay.
It was only when going forward on the default, again, sorry to go back to the shotgun approach, we had multiple causes.
Okay, so you sued for all these various causes of action, and then when you went in for a prove-up, what did you do on the prove-up? I mean, what happened there? You didn't ask to foreclose the lien?
That was Mr. Mould. I was not the attorney.
Okay, whoever was there for your client, what did they ask for in the prove-up, and what evidence did they present to the court to prove up the claim against HSBC?
They presented the evidence of HSBC's knowledge, directly and indirectly, of the work being done in the assertion of the mechanics lien, HSBC's conduct in failing to respond to the mechanics lien or demand letters, HSBC's conduct in then attempting to sell the property even after having notice of the Liz pendants and the mechanics lien, and their subsequent sale of the property by disclaiming these warranties.
And this was done through testimony or through affidavits?
Testimony. and the introduction of documents. Unfortunately, we did not make a recording of that here.
But you didn't ask on the default route to foreclose the mechanics lien, then, correct?
No, they elected to proceed on the tort claim rather than the mechanics lien.
Okay.
Part of the issue there also was HSBC, as a party acquiring the property after the work was in progress, was not party to that contract. They were a subsequent owner of the property.
Okay. Now, the other party, this Wells Fargo entity, was that where they surged and did they default, or what happened with them?
No, prior counsel, I know this just from my involvement in foreclosure cases. Prior counsel was under the impression that ASC, America Servicing Company, was a division of Silver State. I happen to know that it's a division of Wells Fargo. I believe now they've changed it to Specialized Loan Servicing.
So were they served and defaulted, or what happened?
They thought they were served by serving the receiver for Silver State, when in fact that was not proper service. There was no contest that ASC was not properly served and that the judgment against them was properly determined to be void in the lower court.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's it, Your Honor.
Questions? Okay. Well, thank you both. Boy, it's an unusual factual background. I don't think we get many appeals from orders setting aside judgments under 60B, so it's an interesting issue there. On the standard, you should both raise some good points, and factually we'll try and sort it out. We'll check the record on all the various points each side raised in the statute, and we'll take it under submission and get you a decision as soon as we can.